I don't know who was ahead. I mean, I talked about WCW ended on a much more positive note. And the WWE was certainly, in early 94, make some very... Both companies, it's interesting now. You talk about... Well, let's just roll into 94. Let's do this, because I'm going.
Yeah.
94. Both companies in the first half of 94 made a lot of positive moves mirroring each other. Right after 93 was awful. Both companies stunk in 93.
But they both committed to new directions in 94 and stuck with it.
Well, not really. For the first half, they did, and they worked. The Vince McMahon, I loved the ballsiness of what he did with his world title situation in the beginning of 94.
Putting it back on Brett.
Well, yeah, obviously, okay. but the way it was done was...
Let the crowd decide?
Yes.
Okay.
For him, it was... For the way he's always ran that company, it is was so outside the box and was so different that... I know not a lot of people remember it. People just think it's so great because of the formality that Hart gets the belt back. But the way it was done and the way he came to his decision was so outside the box that I really respect it.
Okay.
Okay? The Rumble was obviously the tie finish.
Right.
It was interesting. My brother and I, we bet each other. I remember that Rumble. I had Luger. He had Hart.
So
I remember.
No one won.
Yes. Yeah. We were both cheering. Yeah. No, we were not cheering at all. But he did that. The real reason they did that tie finish is because he wanted to see who the crowd would react better to, and Hart overwhelmingly won the crowd over that night. If you remember, Hart gives an incredible performance that entire night where Owen had turned on him. They did that angle. You know, Shay, my God, will John Harbaugh do that to Jim Harbaugh in the NFL this year? But, you know, and they did the Owen officially turned heel early in the show. Brett comes out selling the knee. He was the star of the show. Luger, God bless you. It wasn't working anymore.
Yep.
So, but I love the WrestleMania 10, the two world title. Again, it was just different. You know, I remember going in, it was cool. You didn't know who was going to come out as the champion at the time. Because Luger, you're like, God, they rode him this far. Are they going to just hose him?
Yeah.
Now, originally, people say that he was supposed to beat Yokozuna and then just lose
got
it to
drunk
Hart.
And blabbed about it to the newspaper.
Yeah.
That's the urban legend.
Yeah, and what's funny is I think it's better that they didn't do that, even if those, because it would have just made him look even more of a chump.
Yeah.
I think that he held, oh, yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Because, so, Russ, that period, and obviously you do the ladder match with Razor and Shawn, and that works out.
Yep.
In ring, Brett Owen obviously do their thing.
Yep.
In ring, the WWF was probably in 94, 94 in general, the first half, because in Japan, you had some things that were going on, which were incredible in Japan. I mean, you had the Super J Cup. That was one of the most unbelievable nights of wrestling ever.
Right.
Won by, you know, the man who we don't like to talk about anymore.
Canadian Voldemort.
Beating Great Sasuke in the final of an unbelievable one-night tournament. All Japan was on fire in 94. And WCW, which had kind of had to make a lot of concessions after begging Flair back, you know, begging Flair to save them. Flair, you know, he brought Steamboat back into the fold as a top player.
Right.
You know, Austin was featured. I loved Lord Steven Regal during this period.
Yeah.
Two of the pay-per-views in this era, Spring Stampede and Slamboree, are two of my all-time favorite WCW pay-per-views.
They were very good, but it was interesting because while the directions were really different, we said they both committed to them. In the WWF, it was the so-called new generation, Brett, Shawn, Diesel, Razor, Tatanka, Luger, etc. Now, they did a little bit of a nod to the old days. You had Backlund later in the year getting back into the main event. You had Jerry Lawler and Roddy Piper at King of the Ring, but they were the backdrop to the new generation versus the WCW. They went hard in the 80s direction. The first half of the year was different.
Yeah. I have never seen a year in any company where you talk about demarcation lines and whatever, drawing lines in. The first half of 94 and the second half of 94 in WCW.
KL and Fry and Bill Watts say hi.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but it just...
No, you're right, though, because it was WWF light from Midsummer on.
I mean, the culture was just...
Yeah,
huge. 80s... The turnover on the roster was incredible.
Savage, Honky, Duggan, Beefcake, Jimmy Hart, Heenan, Sherry.
And that was Bischoff.
That was Bischoff exerting himself.
Remember, we started this by talking about McMahon, the way he presented wrestling.
Yeah,
how he, you know, we're sitting under these nice lights here in my kitchen right now. Bischoff, I remember he brought this up when I interviewed him. with Disney, and people say, oh, dude, it's stupid, you know, you're taping all this stuff. He wanted to make his product look more aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and I agreed with him at the time, I'm like, you know what, Eric? You know, because I obviously, you know, don't like the Disney tapings. In the long run of things, I don't think it mattered that much. You know, the negatives, I think maybe they're overstated. But by going to Disney, I remember at the time watching WCW, like, you know, WCW kind of looks better right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to, like, you know, after the fact, kiss Eric Bischoff's ass. Mm-hmm. But he did. He did make it, although he decreased exponentially the in-ring quality mm-hmm. of what was going on. He exponentially increased the way WCW was presented. And Hogan, I'm reading a lot about this now, this time period.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no doubt about it that it worked, as much as I did not like it at the time.
Right.
Now, initially it was okay because you still had the bleeding over of the previous era. You know, you had the Dusty Rhodes angle against the Colonel Parker.
And that's the thing. That there's your nod to the old days in WCW. Just like the WWF did at a King of the Ring with the old guys, you had the same thing there. Dusty and Dustin in the War Games against Arn Anderson and the Stud Stable on the other side.
Yeah,
so there was, underneath, there was a nod to the old days.
And that War Games was pretty stupid because by that point you couldn't do blood.
But right.
The build-up was pretty good with Dusty cutting that unbelievable promo.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, don't look for another partner. You know, I'm your dad. I don't need a handshake. I need a hug and a kiss.
Yeah.
that is so good. I mean, you joke about it, but that was one of the great promos.
That was
an unbelievable promo. Arn turning on him. I love that turn.
Yeah.
The heel when Arn turns on Dustin. But here with WWE, with Backlund, by the way, that was never supposed to play out that way. Do you know the original angle was he was going to be possessed by Papa Shango?
Papa Shango, yeah.
Okay. And it wasn't intended to be anything. Bret Hart was supposed to feud with Jim Neidhart really hard that fall.
Okay.
And Jim, first of all, who's terrible as a singles wrestler, obviously. I think there were contract issues there again, and that never really worked out. And Backlund got more over than they thought. That was kind of like one of those, wow, look what we backed into here.
Right.
But the new generation, it's kind of funny that they always hyped that,
mm-hmm.
but they were afraid to go all the way with it, I think. Because look at what it's funny that as much as, you know, we say, oh, that was the era of Bret and Shawn, look what they closed the shows with. King of the Ring closed with that awful Jerry Lawler, Roddy Piper match.
Yeah, that's true.
Which both guys hate, and it was awful. It's one of the worst matches I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was pathetic.
It's one of those things that makes no sense. Like, you think those two, I mean, I guess they were obviously both past their prime.
If you think you've seen a bad Styles clash in your life, you ain't seen nothing yet till you pop
that
one.
Yeah, that was bad.
Couldn't work together.
And then SummerSlam 94 closes with Undertaker. That was another huge flop.
That was.
They did. That was a huge flop. And there's no doubt about it. As much as I prefer Bret Hart
mm-hmm.
to Hulk Hogan, we talked about how WCW ended 93 on a more positive note than WWF.
Yeah.
They certainly had more momentum ending 94 than WWF did. WWF now tried to make the huge move with Diesel, which did not work at all.
Right.
Well, WWF totally, because they had to get him,
right,
totally gave Hogan, as you say, the keys to the kingdom.
Right.
And he immediately made his mark by the original plan was he was going to job to Flair. He was going to come in, win the title from Flair.
Yeah.
He was then supposed to lose it back to him with the Clash. And then it was going to lead to the career versus career match in the cage at Halloween Havoc, which they still wound up doing, but it had far less heat because Flair, it didn't get his heat back.
It was
really
like count out.
Yeah.
Hogan was like, I can't come in and lose to him already. I want a credibility.
And to some regard, okay, that's okay. But the problem was with WCW,
mm-hmm.
after Halloween Havoc is where I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just like, I don't care if it's doing better numbers and it's doing better business.
Right.
As a fan, what I like, I can't put up with this anymore. They had, and I think Henning was supposed to come in, and I don't know what the original, I cannot imagine that when Hulk Hogan was signed, they're like, you know what we're going to do for Starrcade this year?
Mm-hmm.
You versus Brutus, a heel turned Brutus Beefcake.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the thing. As much as they had the momentum going and history shows that they were doing much better than they were the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that ain't for me, man.
No.
I mean, it was bad.
It wasn't for anybody. But it's interesting because we'll get to 95 in a second here. It shows you that in retrospect, Nitro started at just the right time. Because end of 93 through 94, we didn't like the things that were happening business-wise, but you're right. WCW was gathering momentum. 95 is when it was getting ready to really build. One quick thing before we get to 95, back to the Disney thing here. I think I have the solution to how they could have done the Disney thing and made it work. Here's my solution. Every time you
did not work. Thing like, not to interrupt.
Why it could have.
I'm saying did it not work?
No, because...
Do you think it was it a failure?
It was a failure because the results got out. You were boxed into months and months of stuff down the road. If you've shot something with Ric Flair with the world title in September and he doesn't have it, you box yourself in. Here's my solution to that, okay? At those tapings, you just cut to the guys in the ring. You don't show anybody taking off a title belt. In post-production, you refer to guys as being the champions or not the champions. Nobody in that arena ever sees anybody
with a belt.
That's my solution.
But I'm going to give back my original question. Were the Disney tapings a failure? Because people like you and I remember the two big gaffes they had. Historically, did that matter? I mean, you and I can laugh.
Why did they stop doing it at a certain point? Because they couldn't handle the results getting out months in advance. They couldn't handle being backed into a corner months in advance.
Oh, I don't think it was that. I think it was that they wanted to do just something. I think it wasn't that they didn't want the results getting out. It was that they needed something fresher. Nitro was why the Disney taping ended.
That's part of it too. You know, but that's all right. Well, do you think my idea would have worked at the very least for suppressing some of the bad elements?
I think they did a lot of that. If I remember.
Maybe as time went along, and I guess maybe that's why things got.
Things like cheer, boo, and right. I mean,
it was kind of silly.
Applause
signs. 95. Here's the parallel on. Here's the theme of the year: big man syndrome on both sides. In WCW, Hogan and Vader. Later in the year, Hogan and the Giant. You know, you had that going on. You mentioned about Diesel being on top most of the year, Sid and Mabel being his challengers. Now, you had good semi-mains in both companies, too. Savage, Flair, Sting, Luger having a good series of matches in different combinations in WCW. In the WWF, you had more of the usual cast of characters underneath with Diesel. Brett was back in the upper mid-card. Brett, Shawn, Waller, Bulldog, yeah, the Brett and Waller kind of feud earlier in the year here.
That was bad, though.
That was kind of bad, but, you know, Brett was having good matches, though, with guys. I mean, the feuds with Lafitte and Hakushi were horrible, but the matches were great.
Yeah, and don't forget your boy Ike Yankum.
That was the exception to the rule. That was not a good thing here, but it was a thing where You had the belt being taken off of guys here at a certain point in time. You had the belt getting taken off of Hogan to set it up for the World War III Battle Royal. You had the belt coming off of Diesel later in the year when they decided that his thing was a flop and Hart was going to carry it to WrestleMania. So you had a lot of parallels, but again, the big parallel as I see it through the year, big man syndrome on both sides. You had Hogan in there basically playing the Hogan of the 80s in WCW 95. WWF 95 seemed to be going for what they hoped was going to be the modern Hulk Hogan in Diesel.
My parallel is that both companies stunk. I mean, 90...
But you're right. You've told me off air you like the early Nitros, and I do too.
That's okay. Now, you caught me.
Yeah.
The first 8 months of
1995...
For both, I remember... I loved wrestling. Was like my favorite thing when I was a kid, man. It was even more than sports. I looked so forward to Saturdays, and then I looked forward to Monday Night Raw a little bit more. I mean, it wasn't as big. I mean, people weren't as into it in school and stuff by that point. But I remember I wasn't watching WCW at the beginning of 95. I have in my huge tape collection, there is a huge hole in the beginning. When that Starcade came and it was Hogan, it just did not interest me. Mm-hmm. I remember when they revealed Beefcake as the mask. I was like, oh, my God.
And they contrived to bring back Flair earlier in the year with the bad stips.
And you knew Vader wasn't going to beat Hogan. And I just wasn't watching that.
Hogan no-sold the powerbomb.
It didn't matter. I mean, that was just icing on the cake. He just knew he wasn't going to lose.
Right.
And with WWF, I gave it a try because I was always, as you know, a huge Shawn Michaels fan. Mm-hmm. And I knew that he was going to wrestle in the main event at WrestleMania 11 or at least the world title match against Diesel. And I was like, all right, I'll give this a try. Mm-hmm. You know, I might as well just keep watching through. But I remember I had no anticipation going into that WrestleMania. Like, as a kid, I always, like, would look so forward to WrestleMania. And here I was just like, God, I don't know about this wrestling anymore. It's like, is it time to give it up?
Mm-hmm.
And... I just didn't care. And this, I do not have a lot of vivid memories the summer of 95 about wrestling. SummerSlam 95 was Diesel Mabel. It is an off. That is one of the worst. I mean, you talk about just Hogan Beefcake sucking.
You don't wake up at night reflecting back on Make a Difference Fatu?
No. You know what I'm saying? It's like there are things that, I mean, you know my memory for this stuff is pretty crazy.
It is.
I mean, this. I mean, WWF in 95 and even through a lot of 96.
Yeah.
You know, after night, and the big difference was Nitro.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't remember a lot of things from that period. Like people show me, like, this happened? I don't remember. Like, a lot of times it's like, yeah. Oh, I remember when I watched this live. And a lot of that's like, man,
there's
I don't remember.
Not memorable stuff.
No, and Raw had lost its luster during right. that. Because they were taped
yeah.
every other, you
Ooh,
know.
They were bad.
And it wasn't exciting anymore. And the big thing, though, to me, 95, the big story is money, the creation of Monday Nitro. And
right.
it really freshened WCW up. Because it was, right. what they were doing up to that point was basically Hogan 80s Revisited. And by putting him from a live crowd, again, he get some of that luster, you know. Live, it's funny. Those Nitro crowds, you go back and watch, you know, him and Bischoff, like the spin now, retro, oh, it's this unbelievable creative decision to turn him heel and NWO. Let me tell you something, the crowd dictated that
move.
It was
giving into the inevitable, yeah,
yes.
You know,
and speaking of giving into the inevitable, mm-hmm. you have the two world title changes at
right.
the end of the year. Diesel had just, had not, they're, not exactly the same circumstance. Diesel just flat out didn't work as the champ. He was bad.
Yeah.
He's the, you know, there's the old famous comment, well, you know, I'm the lowest paid WWF champion of all time. And Pat Patterson's like, well, you're also the lowest drawing WWF champion of all time.
Yeah.
And they give it back to Bret Hart, even though by that point it was very clear that he was just going to be a transitional champion to Michaels. You know, they talk about that a lot in that new DVD, by the way, that was
but
released.
It's funny, though, that he'd become their flair. He'd become their crutch when they needed to take a breath and decide what they're going to do next.
Very good.
Yes.
I like that. Now,
yes.
Speaking of transitional champions, the Hogan thing was different. I think they had just – he came in 94, wins it right away, first
yeah.
match, Bash Beach. And, you know, you've rolled into the first Nitros. He's held it for over a year,
yeah.
which is pretty remarkable in that era. You know, we
yeah.
talked about all the instability with the titles.
It was
I think
too
he,
long.
I think he – well, I think he made the title kind of important again. Now, I didn't like it. I didn't like mm-hmm. the reign at all, okay,
mm-hmm.
from my personal taste.
Mm-hmm.
But it did make WCW seem at least on par with WWF, and then eventually they got better, okay?
Yeah.
But they just had to freshen things up. They had the Giant, who I guess was...
Son of Andre.
Yeah, yeah. but what was so gutless about this Hogan, and this is
yep.
what people always say, well, why do you criticize Hulk Hogan? He's the best ever. It was during this period that my hatred for him just was through the roof.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the smart mark in me was just, I just despise.
He
I mean,
wouldn't even do a tainted job to get the belt off.
No, the Giant thing, they do this DQ finish at the end, and then the next night on Nitro, it's announced that Jimmy Hart, who turns on him in that match,
mm-hmm.
had put in the contract that a disqualification changes the title.
Yeah.
And then they go to World War III to put, you know, of course, if Hogan's not going to have the title, he's, well, I'll let my buddy Randy Savage hold it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even job in the Battle Royal. He is dragged out under the bottom rope when the ref isn't looking.
Yep.
And then Savage eliminates like the one-man gang. And they look. The ref looks and sees that Savage is the only guy in the ring. And he's like,
yeah.
oh, he wins. I didn't know that. I didn't remember that.
Way to get your face over with a tainted win over the franchise face.
Yes.
You know?
And then it's funny. He was still the focus. He, you know, and he loses the. I just watched Starrcade '95.
Mm-hmm.
Bizarre concept for a major show. They did, and I'm not complaining. Even though some of the picks of participants were kind of weak, they did that World Cup WCW versus
Came
New
out
Japan.
Of nowhere, yeah.
It was bizarre. It was so bizarre. And Hogan wasn't even on that show.
Right.
By the way, I remember they did this suspension again. Hulk Hogan,
yeah.
his character. Was so bad during this period. They do this suspension angle. I talked about they actually ran Nitro on Christmas. Raw, I'm assuming, was taped. But they did Nitro live on Christmas that
yep.
year, 95. And Hogan was early, the previous week, like, sort of attacking all these people with chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And they did this suspension angle where he's suspended for the rest of the year. Big deal. He's suspended for, like, a Nitro and a Starrcade. A Nitro that was on Christmas and a Starrcade he wasn't going to appear on.
That'll show him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, whatever. That's
yeah.
real, like, nerdy. But, like, to me, that was such a... But there was no doubt, again, 93... here's, I'm going to keep hammering this home. Again, there was no doubt at the end of 95 which company had the more momentum. I mean, 93 right. with Flair winning, okay, better, good move, WCW. 94, Hogan's, they have that abortion of a Starrcade, but still, they're doing something different, even though it's, they're doing something different by doing something really old that they did. They've got the more momentum. But by 95, man, they, it was for the first time probably, because of Nitro, that you could legitimately say WCW is number one.
Yeah, you could definitely say that. They had started to pass them. They passed them definitively in 96. We're going to get to 96 in a minute here, which is our last year to look at. And then our wrap-up for this is looking at the long-term trade between the companies from 93 to 96. One note on this before we get to that. Flashing back to WCW 92 when Watts was there. Watts had a cup of coffee in WWF late 95. He didn't last real long because the Click didn't really like his approach to getting heat on the heels. But here's the thing.
Wanted to fire Shawn Michaels because he got beat up in that bar.
Yeah. You weren't allowed to have that happen. But here's the thing, though. And I didn't even think about this until the other day. The need to get heat on the heels in that year. What an unbalanced face-heel roster. When on the one side you have Diesel and Hart and Razor and Michaels and The Undertaker, and how many guys on the other side had that much heat on them? I mean, I'm not defending them for pushing Mabel, because that would, much less for pushing Mabel with the name Mabel, but still, they hardly had any heels with heat on them.
Which is why they went three straight babyface champions during that period. And it's funny because I don't know what the original plan was.
Mm-hmm.
Brett calls Sean out on this new DVD that they do. Have you watched the DVD yet?
I have not.
I can let you borrow it if you'd like.
Nice.
Okay. But people, if you remember that WrestleMania 11 match that I referenced, the Diesel-Shawn match,
mm-hmm.
Shawn somewhat selfishly steals the show.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of works. It was an interesting that again, you talk about screwed up dynamics. Uh-huh. Oh, you screwed yourself if you thought you were getting out of here without me confidence. You had a babyface going in. You had a babyface champion that mm-hmm. year who was going to retain over a smaller heel challenger.
Yeah.
And if you remember, the crowd was cheering for Michaels by the end of the match because he was obviously a superior worker. It was a smarter crowd in 95 than it had been in previous years. And I think the Michaels babyface turn was not originally planned. When they had, because remember, Sid was their first big heel challenge for Diesel post WrestleMania.
He didn't even stick around.
No, he didn't. He went to play softball or whatever he does. But he turns on Shawn right after WrestleMania. And I don't think that was the original plan. I don't know what it was. Shame on me. I've heard, though, that they really kind of panicked after WrestleMania 11, after the reaction they got with the Diesel-Shawn dynamic just kind of not working. And don't forget, they also tried pushing Bam Bam Bigelow as a big baby
Your
face.
Main event heel at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, after losing to Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah.
And the Click didn't, like, you talk about people Click didn't, like, they didn't like him, they turfed him out.
Yep.
But, so that was, it's interesting, you're right, they were loaded on the babyface side, had nothing on the heel, it was like Owen and Bulldog, who are great hands, you know, God rest their souls.
Right.
But not, at that point, not, you know, they were not legit.
And Yoko had already done the return jobs from the year before, and was back.
Yeah,
in
and
the,
he was not, and everyone saw him as a bad champion anyway.
Right. He had already been in the tag team ranks with Owen. 96 in both companies here, the story of the year obviously was the formation of the NWO, and then in the WWF, the thing with Steve Austin, that took King of the Ring, that took longer to pay off. But the commonality in 96, summertime shakeup. Now, the NWO, successful right off the bat. You bring in the WWF Boom Stars to go along with it. Roddy Piper comes back in. DiBiase is in as a manager with the NWO, although he wouldn't last long in the forefront of the thing here. But the boom was underway in WCW as a result of this. In the WWF in 96, the summertime shakeup, there were some things that were just complete busts. The Austin thing planted the seed for the boom of about 2 years later. But you start with Ultimate Warrior. He gets the push at WrestleMania, the Quick win. I don't exactly know where that was going in the spring because they weren't immediately going to put him back in the world title picture. Sid comes in and replaces him near the top of the cards. So it kind of dipping their toes in the water a little bit later in the year. Heel versus heel matches on pay-per-view. Austin versus Helmsley. Bulldog and Owen versus the Guns. So there's a start of your Shade of Gray type stuff. You're getting into it heavier with like the Pillman Gun angle, and the Attitude Era kind of saw its roots there. But it's funny because the summertime moves in the WCW, the NWO, boom, that pays dividends right away. The boom is underway. WWF, you had some bad things that happened, things that didn't work. The things that did work took about 2 years to pay off, Kyle.
Yeah. There is no doubt. People always say, you know, it's kind of funny how short the period was, I guess, in the history of wrestling, that Nitro was better than Raw. It's like 80 weeks. I mean, 80, it's like a year and a half.
Yeah.
But to me, when people ask, what was the definitive time period where WCW was clearly better than WWF? The second half of 96.
Yeah.
Like it's not close. Like, they were way better. I mean, way. I mean, 90, it's kind of funny. The first half of 96, the pre-NWO portion of the year, it was still pretty even, people forget. You know, they were trading wins. Nitro was winning more than they were losing, but they were still trading. You know, you had, I mean, I still prefer, I mean, WCW was not awesome in that first half. Hogan was, it was the dying days of his babyface run.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, folks, watch Monday Nitro from the period. The man was being booed regularly.
Yep.
The crowd precipitated the NWO turn, which is why it works so brilliantly. This was a fan base that grew up on Flair, Rhodes, the Horsemen, the Road Warriors, you know, Blood and Guts, the NWA. They didn't like Hulk Hogan.
2 years later, they finally admitted it.
Yeah.
They here's the funny thing. They're still in denial that they admitted it. They'll always be in denial that they gave in to the inevitable.
Yeah, like Bischoff, oh, it was this, Hogan, me turning heel, it was just this unbelievable creative decision.
Right.
Stop it.
Right.
Stop it. Okay? But, you know, the WWF, you know, obviously, they're, you talk about constant with Vader in 93. Mm-hmm. The constant with WWF was Michaels on top.
Yep.
He did not draw well. He did not have a great set of opponents. Well, again, hey, like Vader in 93, I'm doing a little corollary here for you. Who's his first big challenger? The British Bulldog. And the problem with the British Bulldog is,
he stank of mid-card.
Yeah, and here's the thing. He deserves chances in the top, but you know he's not going to win.
Right.
You know, like, no company's ever going to win with British Bulldog as a world champion.
Right, jobber to the stars.
Yeah.
At that point, clearly. But it's funny because you talk about Vader. He ends up being Shawn Michaels' SummerSlam opponent in a match that should have been way better than it was. I mean, those two guys on paper.
That's a good match.
Yeah, but I mean, that.
Well, the problem was Vader was supposed to go over and Michaels balked.
Yeah.
Now, you talk about the Warrior. The plan was, you know, I don't know where they were going because you're right. They did that huge push initially where he crushes Helmsley at WrestleMania.
Yep.
But then they didn't do it. They had a feud with Jerry Lawler in that, like, over a bizarre, over like a painting. Remember, that was really stupid. And then he feuded with Goldust in one of the worst matches ever. I think Goldust was injured, and they just walked after each other. It was so bad. I think it was good friends, better enemies. But
Warrior wasn't even positioned, I don't think, substantially higher on the card than Ahmed Johnson, who was red hot at the time and pushed as being dominant.
Well, if you remember, the King of the Ring paper 96 pay-per-view, which is obviously very famous for Steve Austin, you know, debuting the Austin 316 line. But that show has a really hot ending where Michaels goes over the Bulldog in what's a pretty good match, a very good match, actually. And Camp Cornette comes out and does the 3-on-1 beatdown, and Michaels is saved by Ahmed Johnson, the Ultimate Warrior. The crowd was really eating that up. If you go back and watch that, it was a hot ending to that pay-per-view.
Right.
And that they obviously planned to do the six-man Warrior was fired. They replaced him with, that's when they replaced him with Sid, like you said.
And then Sean and Ahmed ended up being the People's Posse until Ahmed got hurt.
I don't remember they called. See,
they were the People's Posse.
I don't even remember that. But I don't know where they would have gone with Warrior. Eventually, he would have fizzled. But
Probably would have been in the world title picture. That might have been the beginning of his thing, and it might have been face versus face with him and Michaels.
God, I could not imagine that match. Could you?
No, but here's the
because
thing,
the
though.
Thing is, Michaels is such a control freak about the match.
Right. But that,
I can't imagine those two working together.
True, but by putting them in, and again, we'll never
you're right,
know,
though,
because we didn't see International Incident. Warrior wasn't in it. But the minute you put warrior in any kind of a program that the world champion is
no,
in.
No, well, here's the thing,
that.
Though.
You're leading to that.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
Was this what they were going to do?
What?
This is what they were going to do. I'm going to tell you exactly what they were going to do.
Don't even tell me they're going to turn warrior heel.
No.
Okay.
Vader was scheduled to win the title in 96.
Oh.
They would have done Vader. Vader Ultimate Warrior would have been your fall program with Warrior as the babyface challenger.
Okay.
That okay. is where I mean, look, Vince McMahon is not sitting over on my couch. I cannot confirm that, but I bet that's
no,
where they were
no,
going.
No, I think you're right about
that's
that.
That's where they were probably going with that. Now, Ahmed Johnson gets injured, but the bottom line is this. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what they did, whether it was positive or negative.
Mm-hmm.
WCW was just better, man. And especially the NWO angle hits, and then, I mean, it rolls through. Halloween Havoc's underrated. That Starcade was really good in 96.
Yep.
And, of course, they have their two best pay-per-views ever, the back-to-back, the Bashes, the Great American Bash, mm-hmm. and the Bash of the Beach, which began the birth of the NWO.
Yep.
And WCW just changed. It was so good it was clearly a caste system at that mm-hmm. point. You had Hogan and his people. You bring Hall and Nash and hit Hogan's people on top. You had the established stars on the top.
Yep.
Guys you knew. Everyone knew these guys. And
gimmicks
then,
on top, workers underneath, to quote Kevin Sullivan.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was so good, man. It was that they screwed that company up.
Yep.
It is unbelievable. But it was so good. I love those Dean Malenko Rey Mysterio. I've seen some people who don't like them. What's wrong with you?
There's hipsters on like Pro Wrestling Only to think that Malenko's overrated. I don't get it.
Well, those people are tools. I'd like you to pass that along.
Yeah,
for me.
I'll have to email you some specifics.
Okay. But here's the thing. Like, by the second half of 96, when Michaels beats Vader,
mm-hmm.
okay, when they made that change, they had no follow-up for that. He wasn't even,
right.
They were still doing the In Your Houses, which were designed as lesser pay-per-views, and they were mm-hmm. priced as such. They were viewed as such. WCW, after doing their Customer Appreciation Month in January, by the way, decided, you know, all their pay-per-views were kind of viewed as the same. They were big events. They did
right.
a great job. And they just started the second half of 96 is clearly when the gap was the biggest. WCW won every week during that period. The WWF, it's Mick Foley always talks about. It's like, yeah, you know, we didn't start winning the ratings till 98, but he always says that I felt creatively our show was better, you know, by kind of by the summer of 97,
creatively.
And I tend to agree with that viewpoint, at least on top. Now they had such less depth than WCW at that time
right.
that there was a lot of crap still going on WWF in 97.
Right.
But they did not have the creative, you know, it's funny, the Austin thing, you're right, it did not take, unlike the NWO, that did not take off right away. He wasn't even on SummerSlam that year, you know.
Well, a dark match with Yoko.
Well, yeah. But
he won
like
2 minutes.
He wasn't on the show.
Yeah.
As far as I mean, if you're not on the pay-per-view, then you're not being pushed.
Right, right. And he had the match with Helmsley, I think, like a month or so later.
That was on a very
throwaway.
Bizarre and very poorly, I'm sure, very poorly, not well-bought.
It was
not
I think it was
games.
The October one.
Buried Alive. There was
alive,
no,
yeah.
There was like no world title match on it.
Yeah, that was weird. They gave Shawn the month off. On that.
You want to talk about Dark? He wrestles Goldust in an Intercontinental title match and a dark match on that.
That is weird. You know, it's interesting because, you know, we said that like late 93 was when WCW first started to get the momentum. We're going through 96 here, and then by that, you know, so the line was pointing up from late 93 on for WCW. Eventually, you know, they passed them, as we said, definitively sometime 95, certainly by the time of the NWO in 96. For the time period beyond what we're going to look at, I think we would agree, creatively, summer of 97, they passed WCW as the NWO stuff got stale and their stuff started to come into focus. By WrestleMania 14 in 98, it was clear. It was ships passing in the night the other way.
There was a lot of anti-WCW sentiment on the internet during that period because it had gotten very stale. The NWO. This is a different show for a different day.
So beyond what
they had that terrible Starcade 97, which ruined the company. But you're right. But when you talk about, now, I remember looking so forward to Starcade 96. And I was like, man, this is kind of like how I used to look forward to a WrestleMania back in the day. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't even care about WWF. I mean, they were just, they had put on some real bad in your, I mean, Mind Games has the good, really good main event.
Right.
But And Brett came back after, you know, attempting, you know, to go to WCW. But, you know, by the end of 96, man, the gap was never bigger. WWF had that.
Yeah.
What was the name of the pay-per-view? It's Time.
Yeah.
Because Vader was still supposed to be the champion at that time, and he wasn't.
That's true. Good point.
Well, that's interesting. So they really had a big reign plan for him, and that's unbelievable.
Well, and then it ended up being
Sid.
Sid on top. Sid beat Vader at the pay-per-view the next month, you know, in September. And then he ends up, that was the number one contenders match. Then he ends up winning it from Sean at Survivor
Series.
Because
Sean deemed it okay. Well, by that point, they were like, Sean, you got to lose, man.
It was ridiculous.
I'm assuming the plan was still Michaels to win it back in San Antonio from Vader. He probably would have won it back. I assume he would have won it back from,
right.
Yeah. And then here's an interesting tidbit. I'm just going to leave you at this.
Okay.
On this DVD I learned, the Sean-Brett match that never happened because Sean lost his smile
was
never going to be a world title match.
Okay.
I did not know that. I assumed it was going to be Sean jobbing the title back to Brett.
Okay.
Sean was supposed to job to Brett, but it was not going to be a world title match.
Okay.
The world title match all along, because Vince panicked and they both. This is cool about the DVD. They both criticized Vince a lot for preferring big men.
Mm-hmm.
It was always going to be Sid jobbing the Undertaker. That was always the plan. Not always.
Okay.
But early part of the year.
Okay.
That was the plan for the world title match. They wanted to put he wanted big guys with the big man syndrome again. And the funny thing about that whole scenario, and this isn't to excuse Sean.
Okay.
But where would Steve Austin have been in that scenario?
That
instead, because Sean lost his smile, Steve Austin became the biggest superstar ever.
Eventually. I mean, so you look at somebody like Steve Austin, eventually he wasn't going to be denied.
Yeah.
Would it have taken another year or two?
But you talk about tipping points, Malcolm Gladwell?
Oh, that's true.
Okay. WrestleMania 13.
Oh, it was. Two things to close with here tonight. One, the period between 92 and 96, and this is something that came to mind a little bit more recently here. With the monthly pay-per-views, this was the time from the beginning of 92 to the end of 96. You were used to seeing, in that period of time, that was the transition to monthly pay-per-views.
Yeah, 95 is when WWF joined the parade.
Yes. And here's the thing. When we look at somebody like Jerry Lawler in a territory that was CWA champion like 300 times, okay, here's the thing. Why it's so rare when we talked about Hogan's year-plus title reign before. John Cena's won in 06 and 07. To me, that was like 5 or 6 years in the old days, and I'll tell you why. Because 92 to 96 is the period of time that made the major territories more like Lawler's old USWA, because you have to keep the title moving when you have that many things, when you have a monthly spotlight kind of a thing. Because like in the NWA back in the day, you might not even have Ric Flair on a show on Saturday night. You'll probably have him on or at least mention him, but you didn't have, when you have constant spotlight on a world champion, you treat a world title more like a regional title, as far as you can't have excessively long title reigns. We saw that dynamic come into focus.
Yes, I remember I started with just root for change. It got to the point where I would root for change because I was I was just anti-title change.
Right.
I believe in that. Look, you do have to shake it. I'm not saying that you need to go back to Hulk Hogan 3 years as world champion. That wouldn't work now. But I do think they were way too hurt. They were too jumpy with it.
Right.
Because look at WCW when they built themselves back up.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan, I didn't like it. I thought it stunk. Creatively, it wasn't my cup of tea. It was world champion for 15 months.
Right.
You know, Steve Austin, you know, when they rebuilt, you know, the world title has to mean a lot.
Right.
Which it doesn't now when you have two split world titles and they both change all the time.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that part of it really stinks. All right, last thing for the night here. I don't know exactly how you would call this. It's not exactly a trade, but the transition that you saw in the companies between 93 and 96. In 93... each company had a crew of guys where hardly anybody was over to whatever degree. I mean, even the ones that were over to whatever degree, it was not nearly to the extent you wanted. In 96, a lot of wrestlers that weren't over in one company went to the other company and were over, and vice versa. This was a lot. And I factored this out. There were 12, I'm going to say the 12 top wrestlers as far as how they were used in each company in 93. Seven of them in each company. 7 of the 12 would go to the other company, and in most cases be key players. Here's the five WCW guys in 93 that didn't go to WWF in 96. Sting, Flair, Davey Boy Smith, Rick Rude, and Ricky Steamboat. Actually, Davey Boy did. All right, so that makes it 8. Okay, Sting, Flair, Rude, and Steamboat. In the WWF, the guys who were there in 93 and in 96, Bret Hart, Yokozuna, Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, Jerry Lawler. Here's the list of guys that moved. They were in WCW in 93 and went to the WWF in 96. Big Van Vader, Davey Boy Smith, Dustin Rhodes, Cactus Jack, Barry Windham, Sid Vicious, Steve Austin, and Brian Pillman. The WWF, guys who were there in 93 who were in the WWF or WCW in 96. Hulk Hogan, Razor Ramon, Lex Luger, Rick Steiner, Scott Steiner, Ted DiBiase, IRS. That doesn't even include
Diesel, yeah.
Diesel, because he wasn't a key player in 93.
No, he wasn't. I mean, he was kind of a fill-in guy.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody was injured.
What, if anything, accounts for this? That guys who in one company just couldn't get over, weren't used right, whatever, 3 years later you have this massive transfer and guys are over in the other companies.
It was a good time period to be for the talent. What it was, because you had heavy competition.
Okay.
And they were willing to try new things. And
much better booking? Is that an obvious component?
Not always. I mean, let's take. Okay. I mean, I can go through this. I mean, okay, let's see. Vader. Vader was his WCW. He never got to the heights in WWF. They did WCW. Because in many ways, he was kind of a retread. It was like,
right.
You know, you viewed him as kind of a guy who'd worn out his welcome in WCW.
Right.
And so he didn't work as well. Dustin Rhodes. In his a radical character change.
You know what? A lot of these guys were really repackaged. I mean, for every Sid Vicious and Brian Pillman who weren't,
or Cactus Jack, certainly
Cactus Jack, Dustin Rhodes, Barry Windham. Now Barry Windham for the worst.
Cactus wasn't really repackaged. Well, I guess Mick Foley. Yeah, by that opinion,
Mankind was different than Cactus.
Yeah, he was. He certainly was.
I mean, still psychotic, but a different shade.
Yeah, and that really worked. Barry Windham was atrocious in WWF.
You know what's interesting?
Barry Windham should not count even. The Stalker was so bad.
That was.
Sid, he was essentially the same character. He was probably better in WWF. He was better in WWF, I think, just because the pool. He was a big man in a smaller pool.
Right.
Austin, major repackage. Pillman, you know, history suggests he was his WWF run was not great because of injury.
Right.
It just wasn't. I mean, he did the gun angle, but he didn't really make his mark that much.
You know, it's amazing. The guys going the other way, by and large, weren't repackaged that much. Isn't that amazing?
Well, not when you consider Eric Bischoff.
He just took them the way they were, man.
But, you know, in a lot of ways, it just shows the different mentality.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon would never do that.
Right.
Oh, God, no. Oh, God. If it's not...
My fans never heard of them if they weren't here.
Yeah.
He literally didn't exist until he signed that contract.
Yeah. So Bischoff didn't hate, and to his credit, it was different. Mm-hmm. But you're right, Hogan. Hogan was certainly better in 96 than he was in 93.
Yeah.
Razor Ramon is interesting because I want to tell you what. His career highlight is clearly walking out on a Nitro that night. Yeah. But from that time period, I mean, when it was just hit before Hogan, once Hogan turned, he was important, obviously. He was one of the out. He was obviously, you know, the third guy in the pecking order of the NWO. He never really. Yeah. But he never did anything. You know, like, what his NWO highlight is just being the, like, if he isn't the first guy...
Some memorable Outsiders matches, but that's about it.
Outsiders are very good matches.
Well, not I didn't say good matches, but like moment, like they wrestled the Steiners. That was a big deal.
Was it?
Yeah.
I guess it was okay. Lex Luger, much better WCW run than WWF.
Yep.
He was over incredible. I mean, well, it's interesting because he didn't really get over till 97. And as my... thing went out right there. The Steiners, the Steiners certainly had better run, a better WCW run.
Some of these guys eventually got repackaged. Hogan eventually becomes Hollywood. Steiner eventually becomes Big Papa Pump.
And then guys like DiBiase and IRS, they don't even matter. I mean,
That was like we said, though, Nash wasn't on the list, but, you know.
Yeah, he was a major player. No,
I
don't know with him, though, because he's another guy like Hall. Was his career in WCW better than his WWF career? I know
I
the
think
end
it was
of...
much better. I think it was much better.
Do you?
Because he wasn't a 10-month failure on top of a company. He wasn't a sucking, gaping hole.
I guess if you bring up the career of Kevin Nash,
yeah.
See, I don't know about that, actually. I would have to think a lot. We'll talk about this off air. I don't know if he's better known for his NWO run than Diesel.
Maybe this makes me a hipster, because he was like the 1A. He was the LaMarcus Aldridge of the NWO.
Yeah, but it was...
He was a 1A on a championship team, Kyle.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, you're right.
Versus Gilbert Arenas on a bad team jacking up 30 shots.
You're right. WCW was more successful when he...
Yes.
You're right. But was it because of him, though? Or, I mean, he was part of a very successful angle, but...
Yeah.
When, you know, and once again, not to give that no good piece of garbage Hogan credit, but when it was Nash's time to grab the ball, WCW starts stinking.
That's true.
So,
That's true.
I don't know.
But this is our overview of the five-year period. It's a fascinating one. It's very much overlooked, Kyle. It's something that people to this day don't appreciate. But, yeah, we're going to do some other things here as we go along and take a look at some other periods of time and everything as well. But this is one that really kind of grabbed us. So thanks very much, Kyle. Always fun drawing upon some of the old SNS spirit.
This was
a
marathon taping session, by the way, my friend. Yes.
This was the equivalent of 6 months worth in Orlando.
Yes.
But,
yes.
We got some great stuff out there. So, all right. Thanks very much, Kyle. A great night of taping here, the FDH Lounge.